You'll notice as we've been going through those middle chapters of Isaiah 40 to 55, that you hear a lot of the same things over again. Part of that is just because as human beings, we need to hear promises over and over again. And also part of it is that it's written in poetry. And if you're ever wondering why so many of those prophecies are given to us in long poetic fashions, it's because poems are easier to remember. And these were things that were spoken to the people. And as they were given in a poetic fashion, the idea was that they would be easier to remember and to recall those words of promise. Think of it like a song you might hear on the radio. If it rhymes, you're more likely to remember it, probably. When children are stuck in, say, a burning house, or when a family is maybe stuck in a car that's sinking in a river, or when a talented young person is stuck in a dead-end job, what do you tell them? You say, "Get out." Maybe you scream, "Get out." Those are the words that Isaiah gives to the people in exile. The year was 587 BC. In fact, the month was August. We know that the month was August when the world caved in for Israel. The temple was destroyed. The monarchy, the king, was taken hostage. The land became a wasteland of war. All hope was really just taken apart, dismantled. 700 miles from home, the exiles of Israel were taken away, trapped in Babylon. And the prophet Isaiah tells them in our text, "Go out," or a better way to say it is, "Get out." Isaiah tells them to get out. But that's often easier said than done, isn't it? When somebody tells you to get out, it's easier said than done. With every passing year for the exiles, Babylon and the area became more like home, became harder to leave. The gods seemed more powerful, and the true God seemed more like a distant memory, like a thing of the past. And slowly but surely, the exiles began to really accommodate themselves to their new surrounding. We have archaeological evidence telling us that they got to a point where they started to like where they were, that they did better economically in Babylon than they ever did at home. They were living in a comfortable place that was really a place of destruction and death for them. It was their new way of life. It's kind of like boiling a frog. Now, I don't know if this is true, but I think a lot of us have probably heard this, that if you put a frog in boiling water, it's going to jump out right away because, hey, the water is boiling. Much like you would maybe touch a hot stove, you recoil really fast. But it's said that if you put a frog in water and then slowly start to make that water warmer and warmer, even to the point of boiling, the frog won't jump out because something in its system, its body, it's too simple of a being to understand that the water is getting hotter and that it'll basically boil itself to death, not knowing that it's going to die. Don't try this at home. Be nice to frogs. The exiles are like frogs, stuck in a pot of boiling water, but they don't know it. The water is getting hotter and hotter for them in Babylon, but they don't realize it. So the prophet Isaiah is charged by God to do everything possible to awaken the exiles to the plight that they are in, to get them out of their spiritual slumber, get them out of Babylon. So he announces throughout his book that they are supposed to get out. And he tells them about what God is doing. In Isaiah 52, he says that the Lord will lay bare his holy arm in the sight of all the nations. In chapter 40, the Lord's glory will be revealed and all flesh will see it together. Later on, he says that those who wait on the Lord will renew their strength, and a bruised reed he will not break, and a smoldering wick he will not snuff out. And in chapters 51 and 52, we hear Isaiah say to the people, "Wake up, be awake, realize where you are." And then, in our passage tonight, in verse 20, Isaiah says, "Go out. Get out of Babylon. Flee from Chaldea. Declare it with a shout of joy." What do you think Israel's response was when they heard this? It was nothing. They didn't hop right to it. They wouldn't leave. The lights, the sounds, the religion of Babylon was just too enticing for them. And so then in Isaiah 48, throughout the chapter, he calls the Israelites, "Hey, you're stubborn. You are unyielding. You're a headstrong people. You're prone to idolatry. You're deaf. You're deceptive. And you're stubborn rebels from birth." The people of God just wouldn't listen to God. And throughout Isaiah chapter 48, Isaiah is constantly telling them, "Listen, listen." He uses that word 11 times in one chapter. Listen to the Lord. But the people didn't listen. Instead, they respond with, you know, sayings like, "Hey, Babylon, this is where it's at. This is the place to be. This is where it's going down. This is life, liberty, happiness. This is economic success. This is the place to be. Why would we want to leave? You know, it'd be kind of hard. We'd have to liquidate all our assets. We'd have to, you know, change our address. You know, that's not any fun. We'd have to pack our bags, pull up stakes, and move to that backwater country devastated by famine and warfare. Get out of Babylon? Doesn't sound fun. This is the place to be." To me, Babylon sounds like Doritos chips, or like Pringles chips. You know the saying for Pringles? What's the saying? What is it? Yeah, once you pop, you can't stop. And it's true. It's absolutely true. Once I crack open a bag of Doritos, or Pringles, or any chip really for that matter, there's not just one chip. Come on. You can't eat just one chip, right? You go on. One chip, it leads to another chip. That other chip, that leads to a bowl. That bowl, you're eating the bag. After the bag, you're holding it up, getting all the crumbs out. And then you're licking your fingers until your skin is raw. It's never just one chip. Babylon is a bag of chips to the exiles. They can't stop. They're stuck there. One becomes two, becomes three. It's kind of how our bondage to sin is, really. We can't stop with just one chip. Sometimes we can't stop at just one drink. One lie, one fling, one whatever. One often leads to one more, and then one more. And we become like the frog in the boiling water all over again. We know, though, that there's things that are wrong for us, right? Whether it's gossip, food, people's approval, money, or not that it's bad in itself, of itself, but it can be, root of all evils. Some things are just wrong for us, but we become accustomed to them. With each passing day, it can become easier and easier to deny that we are stuck. on stuff that steals, kills, and destroys. This is why God says to Babylon, to the exiles, get out, flee from Chaldea, declare it with a shout of joy. It is in God's heart to call people out of darkness and into His marvelous light. He called Abraham and Sarah out of the land into the promised land. He urged Lot and his family to leave Sodom and Gomorrah and its perversion and escape. He called Israel out of Egypt, out of slavery. At the core of Isaiah's prophecy to the people is this ongoing call for the Israelites to get out of decay, decadence, death. It's the same call to us, and too often we're responding with nothing. We don't listen to the gospel. We don't listen to our salvation. In Isaiah chapter 30, the people respond to Isaiah's prophetic call. They say, "Speak to us of smooth things. Prophesy illusions. Stop confronting us with the Holy One of Israel." But really deep down, we're thirsty. We know what's right. We're thirsty for a clean conscience, a fresh start, for that loving and tender hand of God to pull us out, to be our deliverance. Isaiah 40 to 55 is full of good news. Here's some more words from Isaiah. I am He who blots out your transgressions for my sake, and I will not remember your sins. I have swept away your offenses like a cloud, your sins like the morning mist. These are the great and precious promises of God to His people and to us. God has blotted out your sins. And they are found and fulfilled in Jesus Christ, the one murdered, killed for us. In gangster stories or gangster movies, right before a gangster does a hit on somebody, right before they kill him, they'll often say, Hey, it's not personal, nothing personal. I don't know, that's my Brooklyn accent, I don't know. Nothing personal. But it is personal, it's not just business. It's intensely personal for Jesus. Judas betrayed Jesus with a kiss. It doesn't get more personal than that. In his hour of need, his friends ran for cover. His fellow countrymen clamored for his death. Crucify him! Crucify him! His own father abandons him on the cross. It was very personal. But it was personally done for you. Jesus suffered and died for you. He bled for you. He sweat for you. He cried tears of blood for you. He felt the nails, the thorns for you. And Jesus comes for you in your darkness and in your sin. He comes to rescue, release, and free you from guilt and shame and regret, so that we can respond by getting out of Babylon, fleeing from Chaldea, getting out of the boiling pot, and declare it with a shout of joy.